A Lenten sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 18, 2001, in the series A Fresh Look at an Ancient Story, entitled, Do We Need God to Be Good? The texts for the sermon are Romans 12 and Luke 6, verses 27 through 36. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
Question this morning that I invite you to consider with me. It's a genuine question, not some rhetorical question, not a question for which I have an answer. It's an honest question about which I invite you to think. Do we need God to be good? The question came to me a month or so ago. The Lakeshore Diversity Alliance sponsored a diversity summit at Hope College involving some hundreds of people from this area. It was a very significant event, a day spent in looking in the face of racism primarily, but at all forms of exclusionary behavior that hurt and wound and divide. The keynote speaker that morning was Dr. Greg Williams. Dr. Greg Williams is the author of a book, Living on the Color Line, which narrates his life, his experience. It's a most extraordinary story. There were many of you from Christ Community there, and others of you, I'm sure, became aware of the event. I won't try to give you the whole story of Greg Williams, except to say that he grew up as a lad in Alexandria, Virginia, in some affluence, as a white son in a white family. Through the breakup of the family, the alcoholism of the father, losing everything because of abuse, the mother being forced to leave, to flee literally. Greg Williams and his brother, Greg at 10 years of age, found himself with his brother and his father on a bus headed for Muncie, Indiana, which was the home of his father and his mother, their birth home. In the midst of the journey, the father told the boys, "In Virginia, you were white. In Muncie, you will be black." The shock can hardly be taken in. They came to Muncie, Indiana, to where the father, who had passed for white, was identified clearly with the black community. The father, having lost everything, they made their way to an aunt's place. And here's an address for you. 601 and a half Railroad Street. Being white, Greg was not accepted by the black community. Being black in Muncie, he was not accepted in the white community. That morning he told his story with great grace and passion. A most moving story indeed. He told of the incredible pain of a little white boy discovering he was black and of having his whole world turned upside down. He was exceptionally bright. He was very industrious and hardworking. He and his brother were taken in by a wonderful black lady who had no bloodlines to them at all, but simply provided home and safety and security and encouragement. And to make a long story short, and it is a long story, a torturous story, but to put it all in its final phase, Greg Williams graduated from high school, from college, got a master's, a PhD, graduated from law school, and presently is the dean of the law school of Ohio State University. A most remarkable story. And it's one thing to read it in the book, it's another thing to hear the story in the person whose story it is. And I moved from Holland to Spring Lake along the highway that day, deep in thought, having been deeply moved. And the question of this morning arose in my mind. Do I need God to be good? And what I mean by that is that what went through my mind was the fact that I was so horrified once again with the pain that we inflict on one another. I felt so inwardly devastated by the reality of racism that confronted me with such power and potency that morning. And I thought to myself, in the question of last Sunday, what's the matter with us? What's wrong with us? And then I thought to myself, as a Christian leader, as a preacher, as a theologian, do I need God in order to call myself and you to be good? To be good in the sense of goodness in contrast to the ugliness that is so much a part of the human landscape? Do I need to call in God as some external supernatural being, a lawgiver who holds us accountable, a lawgiver who restrains our behavior, a lawgiver who models out another way of being? Do I need God in order to be convinced of that, or in order to persuade others? Because what I was thinking, what I was feeling, was that I ought to know myself enough to be good. That is moral, decent, civil, human, humane. I know in my depths what goodness is. And I know enough to know to be good without having some external support or some external law code or manual of behavior. I am a self-conscious, free, and responsible person. Why do I need God to be good? Why can't I simply be good because I would be good for goodness sake? Is it not enough for me to see that, to experience that, to be moved at a deep level? Is that not enough to transform my consciousness and to shape my life? Do I need God to be good? To be sure, that's how God has been used. That's how the religions, the great religions, have imaged God. God as the supernatural external being to the universe. communicating laws. This is the way it was in Israel, of course. Israel was a people that was structured by laws which were claimed, according to the scriptures, to be God-given. Obviously, the moral code, the Ten Commandments, but also the civil legislation and all the ceremonial law. Israel was a people of law. They had a manual, a law code, and it was of divine revelation. And we as a Christian church took that over. And we had in the gospel reading this morning, Jesus setting forth that impossible ethic. Did it strike you as I read it again, that impossible ethic to which Jesus calls us? To love our enemies. And finally, concluding the paragraph with, be compassionate as your Father is compassionate. Over and over again, the Israelites heard the word, be ye holy, for I am holy. Jesus said, be compassionate, as your Father is compassionate. And that's the way that the great religious traditions have communicated the imperative to goodness. The Apostle Paul, in the 12th chapter of Romans, a great chapter, almost as difficult as the Sermon on the Mount to follow, to hear. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the perfect will of God, what is good. And going on then in very particular fashion to call us to graciousness, to generosity, to humility, to integrity, to love. Again, an impossible ethic. That's the way that God has been used in the great religious traditions. Negatively put, God is the lawgiver and law enforcer. And to break the law, there is hell to pay. Positively stated, God is the moral example. God is the exemplar of that which is good. Therefore, follow God. The religious traditions have arranged a way by which ordinary humankind, obviously unable to live up to such high demands, would have, through a priestly mediation, a way of atonement and of reconciliation. And it seems to me in our great religious traditions that that's pretty much the way we have come to settle in. We coexist with the evil, the pain, the anguish, the brokenness, the pain we inflict and the pain inflicted upon us, we coexist with it almost easily because we recognize our own brokenness. We plea for mercy. And we go on our way in a kind of coexistence with a world that is so replete with hurt and pain and violence, of which racism, exclusivism of any sort, are simply the outward symptoms. But do I need that kind of external reinforcement or threat or promise? Might it not be possible for me as a human being, having come to self-consciousness and awareness, being a responsible and relatively free individual, to decide and to determine to be good? What, for example, if God out there doesn't exist? What if that traditional religious image of God, that biblical image of God as the supernatural lawgiver, creator, lawgiver, doesn't exist? Would it make any difference in the way you live? At the beginning of the 20th century, Nietzsche, who in the light of the whole modern development, the development of modern atheism, Nietzsche cried out in those famous words, "God is dead, and we have killed him, and now everything is permitted." And Nietzsche saw the collapse of the whole Western European moral structure and went mad. Dostoevsky, in what would arguably be one of the greatest novels ever written, The Brothers Karamazov, has a minor character say, "If God does not exist, there is no virtue. Virtue is useless." Would you agree with that? Do you need God to guarantee value, virtue? What if that God out there, that superhuman being, that human being writ large, what if that God doesn't exist? How would it affect your conduct? Are you good because of God? Do you need that kind of God to be good? Immanuel Kant in the 18th century, who is identified with that great movement of the human spirit, the Enlightenment, the German word Aufklärung, the Enlightenment, the clearing. Kant was convinced that the human family, the human species had come to a hinge point in history, a new level of consciousness. Kant was convinced the rationality of the human being, and Kant was convinced that being free and responsible, the human being would no longer need that external demand, but rather could self-consciously and self-critically determine to act morally. That was Kant, and that was the 18th century, and of course, after the 18th century, eventually came the 20th century, the most bloody and violent century on record. And so we can say, well, you see, Kant, it isn't true, after all, that there is a kind of movement of the human race out of adolescence and into maturity, into adulthood. That was his claim. That it is time, indeed it is happening, that the adolescence of the human race is over and we are moving to another level. But what if the thing that Kant saw is a thing that doesn't happen overnight, not even in a century or two, but what if we are in the midst of a process which, after all, has been underway for 15 billion years? What if the whole process of nature that has brought us to the present moment, what if that whole cosmic process that has issued in a moment like this, where individuals like us can sit together considering such a question, what if that process is reflective of that which is within the process itself, which has moved us to this present point? And as Kant saw, we can come consciously to understand We know about our world. We know through scientific investigation, we know so much about our world. Scratching only the surface, nonetheless, I suppose. Nonetheless, we have knowledge. And we come self-consciously to the appreciation of the wonder of life, the marvel of the world. This morning I looked out as the sun came up and it caught the ice floes in the lake and they glistened like 1,000 swans. And as I was driving here at Little Pigeon Creek, that same sun caught 2 swimming swans in all of their white radiance. And one catches one's breath at the wonder of it all. Even in the frigid March, the pussy willow begins again to bud. What if after 15 billion years, after the torturous process of the evolutionary, biological, historical development of which we are the products, what if we are the meaning of it all? What if we are beginning to see that invitation to be good without external application of law or threat or promise, but goodness for goodness' sake? Ah, you say you're a dreamer? Yes, I'm a dreamer. There have always been prophets and poets and philosophers and theologians and middling preachers like myself who have dreamed of another possibility. Certainly Isaiah did in that marvelous 65th chapter where he talks about the lion and the lamb lying down together and they're not hurting or destroying in all God's holy mountain. And the classic Christian conception of heaven, what is it but the recognition that everything that we know and experience here is only a shadow of what should be, could be, ought to be. Finally, beyond the ambiguities of history and all of its pain and all of its anguish, all of its brokenness, all of its violence, that vision of heaven, that perfect state, that kingdom of God, those are biblical images that emanate from the depths of the human being that knows something other than has ever been. But what if we have come to a point where we no longer look for that external God to intervene and to bring it to consummation? Certainly that was Isaiah's hope. That was Jesus' hope. But what if we have come to see that God is not out there ready to snap the finger and shape things up, but rather God is coming to expression in the human? What if it's our play? What if it's our move? If that God out there doesn't exist, then might there be a spirit within us that is beckoning us to be good for goodness' sake? Then might we see the function of our religious life as the creation, the recognition of meaning, of living with wonder, What if we, in this Lenten journey, might come to a fresh awareness, a new understanding, a deeper appreciation, and an overwhelming sense of gratitude? If that should be the case, then we could fall to our knees and say, "Oh God, for what is God but that which is trying to come to expression, to create paradise, heaven on earth, community?" Then I wouldn't need God to be good. God would be good through me. Then the world would be changed, and we would live with reverence and awe in the milieu of love, in the bonds of community. Then, just then, maybe God would be God.